This audio is brought to you by MuslimCentral.com.
I greet you with the greetings of peace. I'm your host, Fatima Ali. In the first series, Brother Idris Khamisa and Sadullah Khan dealt with moving from where you are to where you want to be. Due to the tremendous popularity of that first series and the overwhelming request for a series on human relations, we offer you this inspiring presentation on the path to positive relationships with yourself and with others. In this series, our presenters, Idris Khamisa and Sadullah Khan, will be focusing on the path to positive relationships. The topics to be discussed are 1. Getting in touch with the real you. 2. Emotional wisdom. 3. Improving human relations. 4. The friends you choose. Idris Khamisa is an international consultant in education and human development. He began his career as a teacher of English. His passion and expertise for the subject culminated in his nomination as the chairman of the English Society of South Africa. He embraced the Muslim school movement in 1987 and since then has been a head teacher of 3 schools. He has conducted numerous workshops in Australia, United States, Canada, England, Middle East, Nigeria, Lusaka, and throughout South Africa. He was one of the founding members of AM South Africa. He is an advisory member of IBER, International Board of Educational Research and Resources. He is the co-author of the IBER Manual for Muslim Schools. His expertise is in staff development and curriculum design. His creativity made him a dynamic lecturer in didactics and methodology at IPSA, International Peace University of South Africa. He also conducts in-service training for business corporations. As a parenting expert and a marriage counselor, he conducts workshops on these topics. Youth leadership is another area of his focus. He is a regular guest on national and community radio stations. Sheikh Sadullah Khan has studied law in South Africa, journalism through Britain, and religious studies in Egypt. He co-presented a weekly Wise Living television program in the USA, from the streets of LA to the hearts of the world. He has presented papers at numerous international conferences in Malaysia, Belgium, Nigeria, Egypt, USA, Iran, Botswana, Canada, Sierra Leone, Sri Lanka, Kuwait, Mexico, and Turkey. He is the author of Dimensions of the Quran and co-translator of classical text, Epistle for the Seekers of Guidance. Sadullah Khan has served as lecturer for the Academy of Judaic, Christian, and Islamic Studies at UCLA. Currently, he serves as Director of Empower Development International as a motivational speaker, addressing issues of personal empowerment, youth development, leadership training, art of communication, and fostering interfaith, intrafaith understanding and cooperation. In this session, we will be dealing with getting in touch with the real you. We begin our journey with a question. Brother Idris, why is there this renewed emphasis on the real you?
Fatima, I'm glad you asked me the question. It seems that there's also the unreal you. Many of us have certain personas. We have a public persona, a private persona, and every individual seems to extract a different interpretation of you. When people die, they say he was such a wonderful person. But his experience might be limited to the workplace. But his wife might say he was a dictator. Now the question is, who are you? And you find, like W.H. Auden, the poet, spoke about a private persona and a public persona. And there is a reason why we have this mask, as it were, why we manifest different personalities, different people, except for those who are true to themselves, are consistent. Because what you see is what you get. No matter who speaks to them, be it a street sweeper, the king, or even the wife or the children, they'll say the same things. I recall asking someone the other day, tell me about your father. He said, he's such a generous person. And I saw his generosity in the public places and also in areas that were quite private. It also reminds me of Iago, one of the characters in Othello, who said, "I am not what I am." So what people see is not my real self. Often we need to get to know ourselves, to be self-aware, so that what we're projecting is our real you. And once we understand the real you, what happens is that you're able to elicit relationships, people can engage with you, because otherwise people are really interacting with a superficial you. In that way, they cannot get to know you. Your responses are often there to appease them. You are not the authentic self. For me, the suggestion is, and I tell people, be the authentic self. So when people see you, when you're smiling, because your heart is smiling. When you are laughing, you are laughing with your soul. When you are agitated, you need to be agitated. In that way, people get to know the real you, understand you, can support you, and then you'll be able to also unleash your potential, because people will give you advice that is appropriate to the real you.
Very interesting, Brother Idris. Sheikh Sadullah, we know that human beings are complex beings. So when we say getting to know yourself, what exactly are we referring to?
Sister Fatima, we need to understand that human beings are multidimensional beings. At least we are bidimensional, physical and spiritual. And even in our physicality, there are different dimensions to our physicality. Very often you refer to ourselves as a physical or material body, what they may refer to in Arabic as the jism or the badan. And you find also the intellectual dimension of the self, which is the mind. And sometimes, of course, the heart, though a physical organ, but very often referred to as the symbol of the spiritual dimension of the physical self. Or the axis between the physical and the metaphysical dimension of a person. Or even the confluence of the spiritual tendencies and the physical perceptions. In other words, discrimination, the seat of discrimination, and the seat of our emotions and our understandings. We also have what we call a metaphysical dimension, spirit or the soul, which is the essence of our existence, without which the physical body is rendered lifeless. Then on top of that, we have within ourselves what we call the nafs, or the individual self, or the ego, the center of human tendencies, of desires, and so on. So human beings are a combination of fundamental characteristics. We are biological, with physical bodies, with particular appearances, with specific aptitudes. We are male or we are female, having weaknesses and strengths. We are spiritual, which is our core dimension, which is not physical, yet responds to the physical reality around us. We have a mental dimension. We think, we analyze, we imagine, we are creative. We have an ethical dimension through which we filter what we perceive through the prism of our beliefs and our ideology. Then we are social by nature, interdependent by design. Though we are independent persons, we are interdependent by design. Human beings are one of the few creatures of a creation of the Almighty. If left alone at birth, we will not survive. So we are independent in some way, but interdependent by design. And finally, emotions, the essence of humanity, often seems to be found in our feelings, from caring, compassion, love and joy, through to fear, guilt, and hatred and anger. And these feelings are primary sources of our senses of being alive. So we are indeed multidimensional selves. And as Brother Idris mentions, within ourself, there are different dimensions to ourself. And on the outside, how we reflect ourselves to ourselves and to the world around us. When we have that as being consistent, then we're displaying a degree of character consistent, if it's good, with integrity, which is the aim of being a good real you.
We can already gather that there are indeed various dimensions to the self. So, Brother Idris, what purpose does it serve to understand the manifestations of the self?
I think it serves many purposes. The one is, the whole idea is when you are interacting with the world around you, it's first for you to come to grips with your interior landscape, what goes on in your mind, because this is what you project into the outside. I'm sure many of you have had this example when you go to the seaside, when the waves are coming in and out, when they're rocking, as it were, and if you are happy, He seems to be lilting, he's musical, he's lyrical. But if you're sad, it seems to be like a lingering sadness. It reminds me of the poem by Matthew Arnold, The Dover Beach, the lingering sadness. There is a kind of sadness not only on the outside but also in the inside. A very important thing is this, that when we are really interacting with other people, we tend to be also very judgmental. We tend to, for example, speculate. And what happens often, our speculation is based on assumptions, is based on your own suspicion, is based on your own insecurity. A psychologist once mentioned that there are four types of people: a sensing being, a feeling being, a thinking being, and a doing being. The whole idea, you cannot always be a doing being. That means you always respond impulsively or you do things. Or you cannot also be a person that is always thinking and philosophizing or feeling or sensing things. The whole idea is how to get this balance. And this balance is very, very critical if you want to be, in a sense, live in harmony with people around you and also harmony within your mind. These are very important issues, because one of the things that worries many people, also in today's society, that they look at a person's action, they see it out of context, and they make a value judgment. They tend to sermonize and pontificate about it, and they don't even know the person. They have no idea what was the motivating factor. But all in life, I think before we judge other people, hold on, sit back, and try to understand the person. As someone said, it's better to seek to understand before wanting to be understood. But I have a variation to this. I said the other day, it's better to seek to understand before you respond. What happens is a tendency for us to respond. And it's very important and imperative that we are discussing the issues of the actual self and the perceived self, so we understand that as human beings, we are not unidimensional, but we are multidimensional.
We are dealing with getting in touch with the real you. Sheikh Sadullah, what is the difference between the actual self and the perceived self?
Excellent question, flowing from what Brother Idris said. The genuine you, the actual self, is the genuine you, your real identity. In other words, it answers the question, who are you? Now, when people ask you, who are you? Normally, we give our name, which can be changed. They give the gender, which also nowadays can be changed somewhat. Your culture, which can be meshed with a mixture of other people. People intermarry, move from one place to another. Your job, which can be acquired or lost. Your status, which can be maintained, enhanced, or decreased. So none of these, neither your name, nor your gender, nor your culture, nor your job, nor your status, really defines or answers the real question, who are you? So in other words, all the answers we normally give are our perceived answers of who we assume we ought to be or what we are supposed to be. So it's not defined by your name, your gender, your culture, your job, or your status. Rather, the actual self is a combination of all the characteristics that are unique to you. There are no two people who are alike. Even identical twins may look identical, but everything else may be different. So the real you is a composite of all your skills, which you may be aware of or not, which are latent or maybe need to be developed, all your talents, your character, and your intelligence. Sometimes you utilize these to the full, sometimes partially, sometimes we don't utilize some of them at all. So a combination of all of these is who you really are. So who are you? It's a combination of all the characteristics that are unique to you. The perceived self is your assigned self, who you are led to believe you are supposed to be. For example, in some societies, you're a woman, your job is in the kitchen. You grow up believing that even if you have a degree or 5 degrees, you ultimately end up thinking, that is what I'm supposed to do. In other words, it doesn't answer the question, but it responds to the general notion of who you are. Not who are you, but who you are, which is determined by external experiences and the personal truths that you have accepted over the years. I'm a woman, this is my job. I'm an old man, this is my task. I'm a priest, I'm only supposed to do this. Or It is also filling of a socially predetermined role. You're almost categorized into a box. So you are limited by that perceived role. So in this case, you are limited to remain where you are and end up developing only as far as you accept what others allow you to be. So there's two differences. Actual self, a combination of all your skills, of all the characteristics that are unique to you. And perceived self, how you are limited to remain where you are, end up living in a compound or in a box, developing only as far as you accept, as far as you accept others allow you to be.
In dealing with getting in touch with the real you, we realize that there is a difference between the actual self and the perceived self. Brother Idris, there are external and internal factors that affect the course of any person's life. Could you elaborate on some of the external factors that has a great impact on determining the course of life?
I think there are many factors. In life, we often say he was a product of his time. He was a product of the home, product of the home environment. They speak about his peers having an influence. Let us explore some of these external influences. The reason why we need to do this is so that we're able to reflect on what motivates us, what it is that drives us, what is it that thoughts of ambition or frustrates us. For example, we look at these external factors. A critical one is when there are certain defining moments in your life. These moments are a result of experiences and outside influences that shape your life, and they contribute to this. Now, as I'm speaking to you, I'd like each of the listeners to reflect on a defining moment, a life-changing moment. It could be a tragedy at home. It could be unrequited love. It could be a thwarted ambition in the workplace. How this defining moment changed your life's philosophy, your outlook. And that's very important, because once we look at how we need to re-engineer ourselves, we need to deal with the past, we need to deal with issues that are impacted on us, because sometimes this could be like a crucible, a real test on each individual. Now, far as defining moments are concerned, they can also be positive defining moments. It could be, for example, your wife giving birth, how it brought the family together. These are defining moments. It could be, for example, a change going to another town. So these are defining moments. And often these moments, as I said earlier on, really contribute to our outlook.
Just to add to what Brother Idris is mentioning about the defining moments, these are events and incidences. And as you mentioned, whether positive or negative, that affect our consciousness in such a way that they have an impact that could transform our life. So they are really defining moments, but very often people don't even reflect upon those. They don't even realize or notice those.
And part of that, Sadula, is people recognizing that there have been these moments. Some people feel that in their life, they didn't have those moments. But the way we look at things, the opinions we articulate, a result of these moments. Some of them could be traumatic. Some of them could be uplifting and liberating. And it's important, as we are saying, and a critical part of the series is on self-reflection, is to understand who you are. Look at yourself in the mirror and tell yourself, yes, I can, I will. I need to recognize who am I, why I feel this way, and what I need to do to change. The other very important thing is this, that often we are at the crossroads of our life. And we have to make decisions, and critical decisions that are often major factors in determining who you are and who you have become. This really affects your life. It influences your life focus and sets you on a particular path. It could be, for example, a choice of a life partner. It could be, for example, making a decision about your own attitude towards another individual. And these decisions that you make, you got to accept responsibility for it. You got to accept the brunt of it. Therefore, it is important that whenever decisions are made, you must confront the reality, see it in its complete context, so you make a more informed decision, not a decision that is irrational or impulsive. And Yes, sometimes the decisions we make are often wrong. But the critical thing is this: no decisions are really inscribed in stone. It's important for us to be malleable, to say, my gosh, I made this decision. Yes, I made a mistake. But the critical thing is not to repeat the mistake. The other important thing, you'd agree, is about people who influence you. People who have left an indelible impression in your life. There are some individuals who have almost like a halo effect. Everything about them you love. They are so charismatic. Everything they touch is gold. You want to be like them. And you assume that they are very happy individuals. But you have no idea. But they exude that happiness. They exude that kind of confidence. And there are also people who negatively influence you, who have a negative impact on your life. So it's important for us as individuals that when we are interacting with people, we need to root ourselves in reality and also realize that we also have the potential to do great things, that we mustn't live in the shadows of other people. Yes, choose the right kind of individuals, people that are positive influences, who inspire you to have a generosity of spirit, to be heroic, to be courageous, to be a person of conviction, and also, more importantly, to be a person that leaves an indelible impression in humanity at large. The other point that I need to mention, one of the other external factors, of course, there are many more, but for the purpose of discussion, we are focusing on these four very critical areas. It's about principles to live by. Any individual, if you got to know someone, and when he dies, without him articulating his principles, you would say, this man who we are bearing today, he was a person of integrity. He kept his promises. And you are able, for example, to relate anecdotes, authenticating and validating what you are saying. He doesn't have to go out and articulate those views, but through his conduct, even in his silences, is an eloquent expression about who he was. So it's important that we also have certain principles, because when you have certain principles, it gives you a vision, it informs your behavior, it tells you how to relate to people. More importantly, it makes a difference, and you understand that as human beings, we all need to have integrity. Now, you speak about others who have no principles. I find it very hard to believe. Perhaps they are such individuals in which they cannot be trusted, they have no principles, they would smile at you and perhaps have another agenda. But sadly, such people also exist. So it's important for us to enunciate, to have like a kind of creed, like a credo in our home. Say, my beloved family, let's sit together and decide what principles we should live by.
Brother Idris has elaborated on the four fascinating external factors affecting the course of one's life. Sheikh Saidullah, could you elaborate on some of the internal factors that affects one's life?
Yeah, I thank Brother Idris for the eloquent reference and expression of the defining moments in our life, the major life decisions, and of course also the most influential people. The fourth one he mentioned, the principles to live by, these are the values that you circumscribe your everyday living by. And this is like an external factor actually, shaping your life, over which you have some control. All the other external factors, defining moments, major life decisions, most influential people, you are responding to something. But the principles that you live by are external factors, but also that you have some control of choice of that. If external factors shape your life, then internal factors, you can say the way you react to the happenings or the realities of life. A person may not have much control over the external factors, but your internal factors allow you a great degree of control over the way you respond to the events of life. So the internal factors are, one, the way you see yourself. I am, now don't forget, it's not name, it's not gender, it's not job, it's not status. What you say to yourself, and about your place in the world, this is the way you see yourself. That's an internal factor. What do you say to yourself and about your place in the world? Number two, the way you think. The way you think. These are long-held, overlearned automotive responses. These are mind responses. With or without real deliberation, people don't think or reflect. Who are you? I'm a girl. I'm somebody's daughter. It's no harm in describing, but it doesn't define who you are. And this is the process of assigning meaning to events affecting your life. This is the way you think, how you assign meaning to things that happen in your life. Then the way you perceive yourself. How do you perceive yourself? Not only what you say about yourself, but how you really perceive yourself. The categorization of yourself by labels which society or culture imposes upon you. That's how you perceive yourself. Then the fourth one is the way you condition yourself. Internalizing of cultural or social labels. Internalizing them, accepting them, and eventually becoming defined by them. The fifth one is the way you react. The way you assess what happens in your life. Why it happens, together with the pattern of your response to that situation. So there are three ways basically you can react. One is accepting responsibility. A proactive and a positive response to life, to the incidents of life. Analyzing your inclinations, your characteristics, your traits, your habits and your actions. Ever aware of the universal law of cause and effect. So you accept the responsibility. Or you can shun responsibility for the events of life. You know, it's not my thing, it's not my fault. Someone else should be blamed. You shun responsibility. Or you can be fatalistic. Actively or passively placing culpability or blame. God, it's God's fault. God determined this. Now, the five internal factors I say, the way you see yourself, what you say to yourself about yourself, the way you think, the way you perceive yourself, the way you condition yourself, and the way you react, either by accepting responsibility, shunning responsibility, or being fatalistic. These are the internal factors, together with the external that Brother Idris mentioned, that determines how you see yourself and how you are seen by the world.
In dealing with getting in touch with the real you, Brother Idris, can you elaborate on the five internal factors that Sheikh Sa'dullah was speaking about?
The first point, Sheikh Sa'dullah, you referred to, the way you see yourself. That's very important. For example, if you see yourself as a person that is of benefit to society, in that way, it is almost liberating. It makes you gregarious. It makes you part of a society as a whole. But if you have a negative self-perception, that can be debilitating and will not allow you to do things. You might cut yourself off society and it's almost like you're excommunicated by your own free will. The way you think, as it was one philosopher who said, cogito ergo sum, I think, therefore I am. It is your thinking makes it what it is. As someone said, if you think you cannot, then you are right. If you think you can, then you can. Now, these are important things. For example, if by nature you are a person that is suspicious, you look at people, that suspicion informs everything, the negativity. There are also positive and negative thoughts people have. Where you perceive yourself, for example, you might perceive yourself as a useless being. Right? This image could be something imposed on you. But you may not be the useless person, but you accepted it. And because you accepted it, you become a passive receptacle. You need to be actively engaged in your own life. The other one, the way you condition yourself, one of the points you raised early on, you say, well, I'm a young lady, I'm a woman, I don't have place in society, I cannot participate in the life of humanity at large, I cannot leave a legacy behind, I must confine myself to the four walls of my room. Now that kind of, as you indicated, putting a person in the box, what it does, it really frustrates and thwarts an individual. But sadly, there are many people who accept this so kind of perhaps judgments people make of others, and that can be very, very critical. Now the other point, the fifth point to me is very, very important, and you're right about this. The one about accepting responsibility. Once you accept responsibility, yes, you become proactive. You do not have a victim mentality. You realize that your happiness is in your hand, that you're in charge of every attitude that you have. I recall the other day when I got up, I felt a bit tired. I was in the shower. I said to myself, I feel energized. I said that to myself. It was a constant kind of affirmation. I did, and I felt great that day. If I said, yes, I'm tired, lack of sleep, the whole day you'll complain about that. The other one is when you shun responsibility. No one can take ownership of your life except yourself. It's important. Life does not owe you a living. It's what you do with life, what you do with time. It's about you. And the other one, being fatalistic. What can I do? I was born in this home. What can I say? Blaming everyone else. What is important for us to know yourself, know who you are, know why you have those attitudes, know why you sit back, why you do things. In that way, it'll make a huge difference and you'll be a far happier human being.
In dealing with getting in touch with the real you, we realize that both the internal and external factors affect the course of one's life. Brother Idris, in your years of experience in empowering people through teaching, counseling, and seminars, was the issue of knowing the self or the question, who are you, a dilemma that people dealt with on a regular basis?
In fact, the question, who are you, is not as simple as one expects, as you rightly and beautifully elaborated, Sadhula, at the very beginning. Who are you? When I start off my seminars, a question I often ask people. People define themselves by the fact I'm Mrs. So-and-so. I say, but I never asked if you married. Who are you? I'm a doctor. I didn't ask you what profession you belong to. So there are many kind of questions people ask. So when people realize that the answers are not what I'm looking for, they tend to be very philosophical. They said, well, I'm a human being. I said, wow, what a profound observation. But one of the best answers, it's a very important thing. If you can answer this question, then it makes a huge, huge difference. The question is, as someone, one of the best answers I've got anyway, in one of my seminars, when one person said, I'm nothing but a servant of God. Now, that informs everything you do. It's a kind of vision. And I found that very liberating, very inspirational. In that way, he's able to reflect on day-to-day reality. It also reminds me of Harold Pinter, the writer, Theatre of the Absurd. In one of his books, The Birthday Party, there was a character that walks in and he walks out. And being a modern playwright that he was, he gives you no background about any of his characters. So a lady asked him this question, who was the person that entered the room? Where is he coming from? And where was he going to? And look at his answer. He said, madam, who are you? Where have you come from? And where are you going to? These are very important metaphysical questions.
Sheikh Sadullah, could we safely deduce that knowing the self is indeed a stepping stone to a meaningful life?
Indeed. You see, we need to reflect deeply, as Brother Idris mentioned, about introspection. We need to reflect deeply on the fact that each action has a purpose. Each life has a memory. And each person has a unique story. And as I always like to say, irrespective of how small we consider our story to be, it's part of a larger story. How does my life and how can I make my life contribute to the larger story of the world? You may play a role in your home or in your street or in your society, which may be a small role impacting on someone who could play a major role, and hence you are instrumental in that major activity. You see, to live a meaningful life, I think there are four things that we need to look at very clearly. One is, we need to be inspired. What arouses the mind? What prompts the intellect? What evokes the emotions and the conscience? What leads you to creativity and activity? You must find those things that can inspire you. You must be motivated. In other words, the reason you choose to do what you do or decide whatever you decide. And then you need to look at goals in your life. Orientate your focus. This provides direction like a roadmap. It helps you to your desired destination. And we need to prioritize our life. The most inner circle, the spiritual and ethical dimension of ourselves. Our immediate outer circle, our family and our home. Then our livelihood circle, our finance and our career. Our corporeal and body circle, our physical health and physical well-being. Our mind and intellect, which is the mental and educational dimension of ourself. And the identity circle, our society and our cultural involvement. So inspiration, motivation, prioritizing our goals and our commitment to build ourselves spiritually, ethically, intellectually and emotionally. And greater living comes by living intentionally. Living purposefully, living with what you call niyya, intentional living, purposeful living for a meaningful life. And then also the gaining of self-control. Take a close look at your habits. Take a close look at the character traits you possess. Take a close look at the opinions you hold and the attitudes you display. Take a close look at how you allot the time that you have, for time is the capital of life. Take a close look at your diet, your exercise, the care that you make for your general health and your well-being. And then, of course, take control of your relationship with yourself, with your Creator, and with others. So, living intentionally and gaining control of your habits, characters, opinions, attitudes, your time, your exercise and diet, and your relationship. And then, simplify life. Do not complicate. Have a positive attitude, which is a winning attitude, and you need to prioritize your life. In other words, if you can hone this in to your own being, imbibe this as part of your life, that enhance who you really are and finding who you really could be.
In understanding what a meaningful life is, Sheikh mentioned inspiration, motivation, goals, commitment, and self-control. Brother Idris, what are your parting thoughts?
For me, it is very disturbing when you look around you, when you look at people, many of them have such tremendous potential to make a huge difference. Firstly, in their own life. They seem to be so negative about who they are. They seem to have a victim mentality. It's an opportunity to understand that all of us are indeed, as we are saying, products of our environment, products of the people that we look up to, products of our home, a whole range of things. You cannot live day to day the same way. As it is said, if you do the same things the same way, you must expect the same results. What it requires, a paradigm shift. It requires making smart decisions, having smart goals, specific, measurable, attainable, realistic, and time frame. In the end, I like to believe all of us want to leave a legacy. We want to be people of significance rather than people of pure success. When people say, this man made a huge difference, this man was out there in the community, this individual made a huge difference to society at large. In fact, this person was a tremendous inspiration. So in the concluding words of Sheikh Sadullah, I think we owe it to ourselves, because in the end, we owe it not only to ourselves and to our family, because children mimic adult behavior. Surely you want to be an inspiration to your family.
Brother Sadullah, in closing, we realize that we have the duty of knowing ourselves and the responsibility of choosing what is best in all our endeavors. Would you agree?
Certainly. I think you used a very pertinent words there, the idea of responsibility and of choice. You see, part of our major responsibility is choosing what is best and doing what is best. So we should choose as a mental attitude and as a means of engaging the world, choose not to lose. You may win some, you may not win some. It doesn't make you a loser. If you run a race and you fall down, it's not, you don't lose because you fall down. You lose when you don't get up. So choose not to lose. We are not perfect. We are creatures of the divine. The divine is perfect. We are fallible human beings. Do the best we can with what we have from where we are. We will stumble, but don't have a mentality that I am a loser. Choose not to lose. Choose not to be stuck. Sometimes you're so stuck with the past that we are defined by the past. Very often we drive forward looking in the rearview mirror. We cannot do that. Move forward, looking forward, learning from the past. Choose a positive outlook. Glass is half full. It's half empty. But which half are you looking at? Focus on the half full, because you can do something with it. The half empty, you can do nothing but complain about it. Choose positive emotions, love, compassion. These are the defining emotions and part of the characteristics of the great ones who have come throughout history. Choose positive thoughts, because your thoughts influence your attitude, your behavior, your words, your action, and your reactions. Choose to apply what is best in anything. It's a choice. Even if you are limited, Malcolm X was imprisoned. Well, he was a person who went into jail, a pimp and a hustler, illiterate. They put him in the worst hellhole in America, and he comes out literate and the most articulate person America ever produced, there was no excuse. Which excuse do we have? In other words, choose to apply what is best. Even if the circumstances are limited, what is the best I can do in that circumstance? Choose to be true you. You are the only you that there is. There's no other you but you. No one can smile with your face or cry with your tears. They can mimic your voice, but they can't sing with your throat or sing with your voice. So choose to be true you. And as Brother Idris mentioned, who you really are. Not what the perceived self, but the real self. Then choose to do the right thing always for the right reason. If you do the right thing for the right reason, then the chances of really bringing out the best in who you are could come to the fore. Be, what I say, unique. Why are you unique? Because you are the only you that there is, and God made you special.
We thank Brother Idris Khamisa and Sadullah Khan for an informative and motivating presentation on getting in touch with the real you. Having responded to why the renewed emphasis on the real you, understanding the dimensions of the self, differentiating between the real and the perceived self, analyzing the internal and external factors that affect you, the dilemmas that people face in relation to their personal identity, as well as the stepping stones to meaningful living. Thank you, and peace be unto you.